You may have found one of these in your bulletin this morning. Will you keep that out? We'll use it in our closing prayer time. Here we are in the God story. We're over a quarter of the way through the God story that we have embarked on since September. 37 Sundays, moving from the beginning of the God story right unto the time of the early church. And so now we've plunked ourselves a quarter of the way through. We're working through the prophets, through the drama part that talks about the people Israel. And the prophets were those people who spoke on behalf of God. And these were not popular people. These were people who were often marginalized, often shouting from the margins, and often thought of to be just downright crazy. Even today's prophet Isaiah, if you read further on to Isaiah, Isaiah walks around naked for 3 years as God using him to make a point. Can you think of your favorite Isaiah quotes? They're probably not about Isaiah walking naked for 3 years in the wilderness. They're probably that wings of an eagle, or God's ways are higher than ours, or behold, I do a new thing. Those are probably the Isaiah quotes that have stuck in your mind. And yet, if you read through all 66 chapters of Isaiah, it's this swirling around of three big themes: judgment, comfort, and hope. Judgment, comfort, hope. Judgment, comfort, hope. Swirling around chapter with chapter within chapter. And even if you stand back and look at the whole piece of Isaiah, chapters 1 to 39 are mostly about judgment. And then chapters 40 to 55 are mostly about comfort. And then 56 to 66 are mostly about hope. And so it's the swirling around of judgment, comfort, and hope. And we don't often like to think about judgment because it sounds like a bad word. And yet, in the hands of a generous God, a God who's always tipping the scales towards grace, judgment is a word that we ought to embrace and even ought to wrestle with and ought to allow our minds and our imaginations to stretch and receive that word in the midst of words like comfort and hope. And so today, I'm going to invite you to stretch your imagination. Get ready to stand and perhaps fall alongside of Isaiah, who finds himself surprised by God in the temple during the year that King Uzziah died. This is probably 740 BC. It's about 140 years after Solomon's built the temple, and the temple's still standing. The temple will eventually get demolished, but the temple's still standing. The kingdom of Israel is in a fragile state, and Isaiah comes along as another nobody in this line of prophets, kind of like Moses and Elijah. Doesn't come from spectacular background, but we have to assume that he's got some in, and that's why he's in the temple. Maybe he's the son of a priest or something like that, or part of a priest's family. I was thinking he's probably more of that flunk-out son, that 38-year-old who's living in the basement of his parents' house playing video games, waiting for his calling. And his parents send him to the temple once in a while to go clean up, to kind of just make yourself useful. Go do some cleaning up at the temple for Yahweh's sake. And so here's picture Isaiah. Pushing a broom near the incense pots with his dustpan, looking at the lofty ceilings. And all of a sudden, whoosh, or boom, or whatever you want to bring in this heavenly vision. Seated on a throne, this gigantic image, Isaiah sees the Lord. And maybe you can close your eyes here. The hem of Yahweh's robe fills the temple. That's probably 50 meters just for the hem of his robe. And so Isaiah's looking into this vision. It's as high as the Eiffel Tower, the CN Tower, as high as the biggest skyscraper that you can think of. And then around this throne where Yahweh's seated, there are these seraphs. And these aren't angels. These are six-winged fire snakes. So think dragon here. And they're swarming around. Two of their wings are covering their eyes. Two of their wings are covering their feet. And these flying dragons aren't necessarily singing like a holy, beautiful choir. They're probably shrieking, "Holy, holy, holy." And in the sermon title, I've put holy, woe-ly, or woe is me-ly. Excuse me. Those fire-breathing seraphs are drying me up. Are you with me, people? Holy, woe-ly, woe-ly. This is a God who will not be tamed. This is a God who will not be domesticated. This is a God who is far too large to fit into our puny lives. And so I hope you have or have been having holy encounters with God. And maybe they happen in this space. Maybe as you look at the banners, or as you pray, or as you spend time with one another, or as you look in your word and think, whoa, this is a God who's bigger than I could ever imagine. And yet this God meets us, surprises us, meets us in unspectacular parts of our lives, whether we're paying attention or not. Wouldn't it be great if on our church sign we could put terrifying encounters with the living Lord every Sunday at 11 a.m. I wonder if that would bring any more people into our church. But, you know, I'm not saying let's be terrified all the time in front of Yahweh. But I'm saying we ought to have encounters with this living God who is on the move today, in this moment, in this hour, wanting to meet us, wanting to remind us that he is a big God, that this Yahweh is bigger than our imaginations could ever imagine. So at this point, the vision continues. Isaiah isn't left in terror, but one of these fire snakes grabs a coal and then actually brings it to Isaiah's lips as an action of, you know how we do assurance of pardon here? It's like a dragonly assurance of pardon. Your sins are forgiven. This God who's always tipping the scales towards grace says, your guilt is taken away, your sin atoned for. And Isaiah's laid out. And as he kind of comes back to consciousness, he hears this holy trinity talking, this holy council of God, holy round table saying, who will go for us? And Isaiah, sounding a bit like Peter, who we heard of in our gospel reading today, just kind of blurts out without even thinking, here I am, send me. And too often the public reading of this text ends there in verse 8. And then we can sing that song, here I am, Lord, is it I, go and send me. But if we keep on reading in today's text, we see that that's not all. That yes, Isaiah says, send me, but the message is puzzling. The message is distressing. And even a couple verses later, Isaiah is saying, well, okay, here I am, send me, but how long do you want me to do this message? All these people will hear, but they won't understand. They'll see, but they won't perceive. Their hearts are going to become dull and calloused, and they won't turn and be healed. Try making a hymn out of that stuff. So, here I am goes to how long? And Yahweh replies, until the cities are ruined, until the farms and fields turn into wasteland, until there's only 10% of the land that's still around. And I think this is where we hit the big trouble in the text. Dullness, depravity, ruined, deserted, forsaken. Where is the good news in this mess? Well, I want to remind us that the good news is not found in victory marches in the God story, or crusades in the God story, or these Christianese battle cries in the God story. The good news is found in the messy and broken places of God's story and God's creation. And hopefully that's good news for you and me, because we recognize that our own lives are a mess. When Eugene Peterson reflects on the story of Isaiah, he reminds us that our mess is the fodder that God worked with to proclaim good news. He writes, "The impressive art of Isaiah involves taking the stuff of our ordinary and often disappointing human experience and showing us how it is the very stuff that God uses to create and save and give hope." God uses everything and everybody as material for his work, which is the remaking of the mess we have made of our lives. I want to read that phrase again. God uses everything and everybody as material for his work, which is the remaking of the mess we have made of our lives. So the good news here is that the mess is where God works. God does not expect us to toughen up or to pull ourselves up from our bootstraps. God is not a life coach whispering into our ear, "Look good, feel good, look good, feel good, look good, feel good, look good, feel good." This is not Yahweh. This is not the God that's bigger than our imaginations, our hopes, our dreams, our messes. No, God is using everything and everybody as material for his work. So the final verse of our text for the day is verse 13. "But the holy seed will be the stump in the land." The holy seed will be the stump in the land. In the midst of desolation and despair, there's this promise. The promise of a holy seed who will emerge from a stump. This holy seed who in just 2 weeks, we will prepare for this seed's advent. This seed's arrival. This seed who doesn't come stomping in on a white horse ready to take us away from it all. But this seed who is carried by a teenager, an unwed pregnant teenager. The seed that will not be born in a palace, but the seed that will be born in a rented farm trough. God is using everything and everybody as material for his work. So this morning, we have an opportunity, like any other Sunday, to encounter a living God, to bring our undoneness to the throne of a living God, to look for the glory of this living God in our imaginations, in the mystery of what we do in this place from week to week, in the presence of one another. Think of Paul writing in Colossians, "Christ in you, the hope of glory." And so dwelling in this ancient text of ours, standing beside this surprised and ambushed prophet, we can say, "Holy God, here we are. Send us. Don't send us in power and pomp, but send us in gentleness and humility. Don't send us with a message of shame, but send us with a message that will find a welcome in deserted, despairing, and broken places where you send us this week. Don't send us thinking we have you on our side, in our pockets like a good luck charm, but send us because you go before us, and we will join you as God, you restore the world. And we'll do so with our simple faith, with our frail voices, our nervous and trembling hearts. Holy God, here we are. Send us." As we close with prayer today, I want you to sit in silence for one moment. And perhaps a word or an image will fill your heart or your imagination. Don't try to chase after that word. Let it come to you. Allow the Spirit of God to bring that to you, that word or that image. And sit with that word and consider your word to take with you as you're sent again this week into a world that needs to hear good news. Let's sit, receive, and pray together. Isaiah comforts us with these words: when you go out looking for your old adversaries, you won't find them. Not a trace of your old enemies, not even a memory. That's right, because I, your God, have a firm grip on you, and I'm not letting go. I'm telling you, don't panic. I am right here to help you.